Hi there, Dr. B here with your Module 5 clarifying lecture. For the most part, I'm going to be going over the inner teach. There aren't too many announcements, except that if you have not contacted your peer review partner yet, you must do so as soon as possible, because you not contacting your peer review partner is going to affect their grade. They can't do their assignment without you, so please make sure that you contact them. And I'm going to go ahead and apologize for the sound behind me. The heater in my office sometimes makes odd noises, so if you're hearing that background noise, I apologize. All right, let's talk a little bit about your inner teach. I do want to mention that there are new participation guidelines, and Terrell will be giving you your participation points soon enough. They have been listed in three places. They're coming into your announcements. They're on your inner teach document itself, and they're in the place where I post the grades. So there are three places where you can find that information. All right, so let's talk a little bit first about language and precision. So when you go to take the exam, you're not going to have a whole lot of time to try to figure out what the question means. And a lot of what I see as the problems in our science of behavior right now are that people are kind of sloppy with terms, and they try to make it, you know, accessible to the masses. And what happens is that some of the nuances of that get a little watered down. Our book is really guilty of that. And I'm gonna talk about some places where our book is super guilty of that, as a matter of fact. And you know, to a parent, or a consumer, this may not mean as much. Sometimes it will, especially in the case of when we talk about manipulate and control, because those mean something very different to us than they do the lay public. And so we have to be really careful about how we talk about that stuff. But for a behavior analyst, that can mean success or failure in your cases. So please, please, please make sure that you're staying precise with your language. I know it sounds like I'm picky. I know it's like, why I said it? Why does it have to be said this way? I totally get all that, but precision does matter in behavior analysis. And the more precise you are, the better a behavior analyst you're gonna be in the end. All right, so let's talk a little bit about places where I see things getting a little sloppy. I'm still seeing reward versus reinforcer. And remember that reinforcer is a stimulus presented after a response that increases the likelihood of that response occurring again in the future. I really, really have a problem with, and I know it's all over, I know it's in your book, it's in the Cooper book, it's everywhere, the term desired behavior. We don't desire behavior, okay? We don't. We increase responding that is socially acceptable, but we don't really have desired behavior. Besides, it sounds a little weird to me. So I prefer the term target behavior. And you'll see in when you get to 622 why that's important. Because remember that the science of behavior and the laws of behavior have no idea what's appropriate and inappropriate. They don't. You can shape any behavior. You can fade any part of a stimulus. You can reinforce problem behavior. You can punish appropriate behavior. You can do all of these things with the laws of behavior. Society and our interlocking contingencies are the reasons why some things are appropriate and why some things are inappropriate. So please stay away from the term desired behavior. Remember that motivating operations are not the same as motivation. Motivation is an explanatory fiction. Reinforcement cannot motivate. In a second, I'll talk a little bit more about what a motivating operation actually is. But for now, reinforcement cannot motivate. Stimulus control does not encourage a learner. So stimulus control is a relationship between an antecedent stimulus and its response. When they go together, it's stimulus control. There's no encouraging the learner, there's no acknowledging the learner, and in fact, stimulus control isn't just for learners. It's for everybody. It's for every sentient being. So it's really important that you have that information really, really, really cold. So let's go into... now, you know, before I do that, let's go into antecedent's behavior and consequences, because I'm also seeing y'all kind of mixing those up. And this is something that's kind of our bread and butter. So if you don't get this, the rest of the seven course sequence, the BCBA exam, everything is going to be really, really rough for you. So let's go over it and make sure you have it. So antecedents are stimuli that come before a response. And those stimuli that come before a response have lots of different properties. Those are antecedents, okay? Come before, ante. Ante means before. Behavior is the response that occurs. We don't talk about having behaviors in behavior analysis, because if somebody's not having behaviors, they have died. So we talk about, you know, contextually appropriate, contextually inappropriate, or appropriate or inappropriate behavior, but we don't talk about having behaviors. It's any response that occurs. Things that come after a response are consequences. And those that affect future responding come in two types. You either have reinforcing consequences that increase the likelihood, or you have punishing consequences that decrease the likelihood. But the antecedent, the response, and the consequence are three separate things. So let's talk a little bit about motivating operations first off. A lot of people seem to be kind of confused about it. You know, it's reinforcement, the motivate. No. Motivating operations are what determines the strength of the antecedent and the consequence to evoke the response. So, an establishing operation is going to make that antecedent and consequence super strong, and you're really likely to evoke that behavior. So think about kind of a motivating operation like a dimmer switch on a light. So if that dimmer switch is turned up really, really high, you have an establishing operation where the SD is bright, the reinforcer is bright, the behavior is going to happen. If you turn the dimmer switch down, the SD is pretty weak, as is the reinforcer. That's an abolishing operation. So motivating operations affect the strength of the contingency. They do not motivate people to do things, okay? So that's really important. Now let's talk a little bit about the difference between an SD and an MO. So an SD is a signal that reinforcement is available. It occasions the response, is another way that we sometimes talk about it. It is a discrete event that happens before a response that triggers the likelihood of that response going up. So if an SD is presented, let's say, you know, the classic stop sign, individual stops, we say that behavior is under stimulus control. Okay, a person cannot be under stimulus control. That is very important. Only one discrete behavior can be under stimulus control. If I send out a message that says, hey, my clarifying lecture is available, go watch it, and you go watch it, your behavior is under stimulus control of my announcement. Okay, so SDs, S deltas, what you need to know is if the signal's present, does the organism respond? If yes, stimulus control. If the signal is not present, does the individual respond? If not, stimulus control, right? So that's what's important. Now, let's talk a little bit more about rule governance, because rule governance is tricky. We're not talking about rules, okay? And in fact, when you get to 622, Charlie Catania, who is one of my mentors, talks about verbal governance rather than rule governance. And I kind of like the term a lot better, not just because I'm Charlie's student, but I think it makes a lot more sense. So verbally or rule govern means that verbal behavior is an SD for a response. So when you see a sign that says all employees must wash their hands before going back to work, and people are washing their hands more often, that's more rule governance. And rule governance versus contingency shape. So contingency shape means that you got to contact the reinforcer for it to work. Okay? For that relationship to be established, you have to contact the reinforcer. With verbally or rule governed behavior, you do not have to contact the reinforcer in order for there to be a relationship between the SD and the behavior. So don't touch a hot stove is rule governed, because you don't have to touch a hot stove for that behavior to be under stimulus control. Or make sure that you wear pants when you go out. You don't have to contact the punishing contingencies of not wearing pants in order to have, you know, that rule control your behavior. So that's the difference between rule governance and contingency governance, okay? Very, very important to understand the differences between the two, especially as we start getting into relational frame theory, which I'm going to talk about equivalence next, and we start talking a little bit more about, when you get to 622, about how we talk about thinking, remembering, that type of thing. All right, so let's see here. Talked about verbal governance. So let's actually go to equivalence. A lot of you are still confused about equivalence. Some of you are trying to use math and you're saying, you know, the transitive properties of addition. I get why you're doing that, because I said positive means to add and negative means to subtract. I get why you're doing that, but that's not what it is. It is related to mathematical properties, but not the ones that you learned in first grade. All right, so reflexivity. That is that two stimuli that are equal match each other. That's all that is. Okay, so I've got two index cards right here. They're identical. This one matches with this one, this one matches with this one. That is symmetry, okay? Reflexivity is that if I say, this is an index card, and I put a bunch of, put some things out, and I say, find the index card, that you pick up the index card. Now, what happens is if I say, this is an index card, and then you're able to then reverse that so that, let's say, you select a button when you see this index card, that would be, that is symmetry. Transitivity is, let me do this real quick. Okay, let's say I had you match this index card to the written word index card. Match it, match it, okay? Now I'm gonna test it and see, if I give you an index card, are you able to match it to the word? Okay, that's that reversal. I also said, this is an index card. Get the index card. If I say to you, pick out the word index card, and you can do that without training, that's transitivity. Okay, that's the difference between all of these. So that's, hopefully that clears up what reflexivity, symmetry, and transitivity are. And those are gonna be important when you get to relational frame theory. You are gonna see these again. So that's important. Now let's talk a little bit about shaping, fading, and chaining. I looked through the book. I'm not sure if this is because the book talks about things specific ways, but a lot of you kind of got this jumbled. So shaping. Shaping is teaching a brand new behavior by reinforcing refinements to the target response, okay? So if you think about refinements to the target response is the best way to put it. So when I wrote my dissertation, it went through multiple revisions until it was in its final form, shaping the dissertation, okay? That is what shaping is. Shaping does not involve prompting. I think that the book says that, but shaping really doesn't need to involve prompting. You can shape any behavior, so it doesn't have to be a quote-unquote correct response for a behavior to be shaped. Lots of behaviors that we don't like are shaped all the time. Chaining is when you take a task and you break it down into its steps. Now, a lot of you did toothbrushing, putting on shoes, making PB&J, all true. When you take a COVID test and you follow the directions of the COVID test, that's a task analysis. There's lots of different task analyses out there. Task analyses break behavior down into its chain, okay? I'll tell a story about chaining that involves an inappropriate response. So worked with a client, and that client would flop to the ground. This is like 25 years ago. And when the client flopped to the ground during transitions, toys would be brought out. And then this client would get up and transition to where we were all going. So we rarely had a transition without flopping. Guess why? Because we had chained. Leave the room, flop, get up, preferred reinforcer. Okay, so you can chain just about any behavior. It doesn't have to be an appropriate behavior, okay? It's another one. Fading prompts is one of the kind of most well-known fading that you can do, but it's not the only thing. You can fade a schedule of reinforcement by increasing the response requirement. You can fade different properties of stimuli. If you've ever seen a logo where it gets more and more vague as the years go on, that's fading, okay? So fading is just changing the properties of a stimulus. So that's really important. So those are the differences among them. Shaping teaches a new behavior. Fading is changing some property of stimulus. Chaining is breaking something down into its component parts. And the first one has to happen before the second, and so on and so on and so on, etc. One last thing. Please state where you're accessing your images, okay? If you are downloading images, then they have to be referenced. I prefer that you do not download them. If you draw them, I'm cool with that, but I would prefer that you not download images. All right, one question we have tonight. Thinking about non-contingent reinforcement, if it is happening regardless of what behaviors are occurring, what is it reinforcing? A great question. You're actually just reinforcing the passage of time. Honestly, that's all you're reinforcing. You're not reinforcing anything that any sentient being is doing. You're just reinforcing the passage of time. That's it. All right, so thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you in Module 6.